Hey guys, it's time for a not so Star Trek Syntholics episode, and this week we chose Aquaman. But in the Christmas spirit, we wanted to gift you with the opportunity to watch it for yourselves first. So, what we have for you this week are some minor thoughts and feelings on the film, and then we'll kick it over to a more Christmassy episode. We hope you are all enjoying this holiday season, and we will toast you in the new year.
Syntholics, the Star Trek podcast.
Welcome to Syntholics. It's windy outside and the winds are galing. With me is...
the galing sounds of Aaron O'Brien.
Gale Aaron O'Brien, nice to have you with us.
Good to be here.
And Holly.
Can I be a mermaid?
You can be whatever you want.
Right on. Okay.
I'm being a mermaid.
There you go.
It's the opposite, though. So I keep the legs, but then the fish hat part is my...
like on Family Guy.
Yeah, it's a Family Guy.
That's awesome.
Thing.
And we've got Holly Michelle, full name. Woo.
So guys, this is how it goes. So we cover Star Trek all the time. We've been doing sci-fi. But I really have a confession to make. I am a gigantic, huge nerd for Aquaman. I've been probably since I was 16 years old.
He's got a fish boner.
I do have a fish boner for Aquaman. And I've read the comics. I've suffered the indignities that have been thrown his way by Robot Chicken and everyone else. And I take it with stride. You know, he's a goofy character, but there's some good stories there. So when this movie came out, Dave graciously said, let's cover this movie.
Let's do it. It's your movie. It's your time. We gotta let Aaron's time fly.
It's my time to shine.
Yes, and revel in something that no one ever thought would ever happen.
That's true.
In many, many lifetimes.
Absolutely.
So
the only thing that's a bummer is that it's still in theaters. So
it just came out. So it will be spoiler-tastic. We're gonna try and do a quicker recap than we normally do. And it's gonna be a little bit almost like a live episode because we're recording this on Christmas Eve Eve, and I want it to be out by Christmas Eve morning, and so it's gonna be the fastest edit I've ever done.
Yeah, and so this would be a nice thing. So maybe you're trapped with your family someplace, or with Uncle John, who just keeps on annoying you with the stuff he says, and he's farting a lot. Maybe you put on the earbuds and listen to a little Aquaman.
Yeah, some Syntholics. I mean, we hope you guys are here because you like us and you like the banter between us. And of course,
we know that's not true.
Of course, you like the Star Trek. So we hope discussions about other things will be just as interesting as discussions about Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah.
So last time we had a little bit of like our audio artifacting, and I just made like audio cues to let you know that there was a cut because the audio was lost, and I'll probably do something like that again if audio is lost this week. I hope not. I hope my Christmas present for my machines is that it'll record nicely.
Yeah, Santa, please. So should we get into Aquaman the movie?
Let's dive in.
There are going to be so many silly jokes like that.
Yeah.
I bet it'll make a splash.
It's going to be so wet.
Right.
Mm. So parts of female anatomy. Mm.
So Aquaman, the movie. This is directed by James Wan. Story by the comic book writer Geoff Johns. He did one of the big reboots for the New 52. So that's cool. And obviously starring the fabulous Jason Momoa. And the movie was released here in the United States on December 21st, 2018. Just real quick, we've got the budget to make the movie was $160 million to $200 million. And the box office so far, as of Christmas Eve, is $482.8 million. So it's making money. It's doubled its money so far. And it's only
$160 million?
So they released it in China first. So in the Asian markets first. So I'm assuming they got a big chunk through there first. And then the first couple – in America, they only made about, I think, 38 so far for the first 2 days. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what it is today. So that's what I saw.
Gotcha.
And if you're curious, Rotten Tomatoes, the tomato meter gave it a 64%, but audience score gave it an 86%. So,
and those numbers will probably still fluctuate a bit because Rotten Tomatoes is known to do that.
Yes. So, I mean, it's got mixed reviews, and we have lots of things to say about this. But let's just get into a plot. This is will be spoilerific. So if you're if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to hear spoilers, you might want to skip ahead for about maybe a good 15 minutes or so. And if you don't care, let's go right ahead.
Or come back and listen later once you've seen it.
Yeah, you can do that too.
Yeah, come back. Join us.
Come on back.
Come back.
Come on back, y'all. So,
bring us a nice tea. And a rocking chair right next to your big old beautiful lighthouse.
With some Petri Farm cookies.
If you find a woman, don't do CPR first. Bring her into your house before you attempt CPR.
That's right. If you find a woman with a trident.
So, Aaron, what are your quick initial response to the movie? What did you think? Was it everything you hoped for in an Aquaman film? Because personally, I have no idea what to hope for in an Aquaman film. I just assumed I'd see Jason Momoa, and that's all I knew I was going to get.
So it's a weird thing because, you know, like we were saying before, like no one ever for me in the my wildest dreams, I never actually imagined I'd ever see and sit in a theater to see an Aquaman movie. Aquaman's always been maligned, kind of put to the side as a joke kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just like you just took it at what it was. And so when I heard that this thing was going to finally get made, actually, this was announced like years and years ago, like back in the early 2000s. And this thing's been going through a lot of like iterations, I guess. And finally, you know, finally where the DC universe is happening, you know, we get this this Aquaman thing come up. But so here's my initial thoughts. I'm happy this movie is here and I'm happy that we get to see it. But it is where it's great, it's awesome. Like visually, it's probably the most beautiful movie I've seen in a while, maybe since mm-hmm. Avatar.
I was gonna say that.
Yeah, it's an Avatar kind of like level, you know, movie. But then there's a lot of weird stuff that goes on. First of all, there's a lot of weird scenes. Like the first scene where we see Jason Momoa as Aquaman, where he jumps in the submarine and he's fighting off the Black Manta's pirates. There's like these, like he walks through steam and there's like this weird 80s cheese music that comes out. And I'm like, who, what? Like what was that on purpose? Did you do that on purpose? Or is that just, do you really think that was a good choice? You know, just like weird things like that. Like I almost wonder if the director is kind of fucking with us a little bit. I don't know.
Us being the true Aquaman fans.
Well, no, just anybody, just okay. Us watching it.
I didn't even notice that.
Oh my god, it was so silly. There's some like I mentioned before, you know, Mira playing the flute on the boat when he wakes up. When they're leaving Sicily, like, how does Mira know how to play the flute? She lives underwater.
Lots of practice with the skin flute.
And then who the fuck is driving the boat?
The boat.
I mean, like, just like...
Yeah, she shouldn't really know how to sail.
Well, I mean, just, even if she knew how to sail, like, who's driving it? It's just, it was moving along. Anyways.
She used the club.
And then, she's using water to drive it.
Maybe she's using her power the entire time. It just pushed.
She could be
pushing that, the
actually. That is an intelligent way to answer that question.
That's plausible. She doesn't need to drive the boat. She uses her powers. That's great.
The very last scene where Aquaman jumps out of the water. He's like, I am Aquaman and stuff like that. I'm like, come on, really? That's what you're doing? It's just like little silly things. It's like, it's not like, it doesn't ruin the movie, but it makes me go like, what?
Right.
The hero pose. I thought you'd eat that up.
I mean, to a moment.
It made for a good poster, but.
Yes.
It wasn't in his character to do that.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing is I felt that Jason Momoa is not a very. Here's the thing. I don't know if he's not a good actor or maybe that that the director didn't really give him a lot of direction or didn't push him for a better performance, because I felt like some of their dialogue between Aquaman and Mira were a little bit like a little off.
I don't think that has. I mean, it might have something to do with the direction. It might have something to do with Jason Momoa's acting. I don't think it's either of those. I think Amber Heard and Jason Momoa have zero physical or any kind of chemistry together at all. It's like they were shot on green screen against each other and they weren't actually in the same room with each other. That's because, you know, Ewan McGregor, he's a great actor, but his acting is pretty terrible in the prequels because he's standing in front of a blue screen all the time. That's what it felt like watching them act off each other, because it felt like they can't stand each other, or they don't have any chemistry, or they're not even on the same set together, so they don't know how to act with each other.
I don't know, but I mean, this is the thing. It's like I said, this movie is so beautiful, but there are little moments where they had these dialogues. It kind of broke the spell for me on this and got me out of my dreamlike state that I was with this movie. And
you said they were supposed to be married. They've been married forever, and the fact that they got two actors that have zero chemistry together is not great. Because I mean, I don't think they're bad actors on their own. I just think maybe they don't like each other, or the director.
Or comes back around as a director, yeah.
Yeah, or it's the director.
But it's really the director's thing is say, hey, you know, that scene was okay, but we could do better than okay, kind of thing. Let's try it again. Let's do this like 20 times.
Or maybe George Lucas. He's not a people director. He's an action director.
Yeah, that's possible. Or maybe he was like, you know, maybe that he did do it 20 times and it was like, that was the best take I got, you know. So that was the other thing. Also, the music in some of these things were really bizarre. Like the weird, Africa song when they go to the Sahara, and it's Pitbull and Rihanna doing Africa. It was really just another thing that just kind of like snapped me out of the movie. I'm like, what? This is weird, you know? And I don't know. It was just like, so like I said, this was a very beautiful movie. I'm very excited. Do I think it's a great movie? No. I think it's a good movie. I think if you want to go and just kind of like turn your brain off and enjoy a visual candy feast and have a little fun, it's great. You can bring the kids. It's a very, you know, innocent movie for them. It's not, there's no sex, blood, or guts, or really much swearing.
A bit of cursing.
I think he called his brother a dick. I think that's about it.
He says like shit couple of times. And what's another one he says? I don't know. It's kind of loose with cussing, but it's not like they don't say the F word.
Right. No F bombs. And the last thing is, like, a lot of people, even before the movie came out, were like, well, aren't you kind of, like, pissed off? They would ask me, because they knew I was an Aquaman fan, that he doesn't really look like Aquaman, you know, the Jason Momoa's character. And I'm like, do I wish that I got to see the Arthur Curry that I read in comic books for all these years more than the Jason Momoa character? And I'm like, well, you know, maybe a little bit, but I just love that, you know, Momoa took the character, kind of made it its own, made it his own way, and people are loving it because of him as well. Because he carries the movie quite a bit. I mean, Jason Momoa is obviously, he's got a great spirit. Good people just love him as a person, and he's just a beautiful person, period. So, mm-hmm. You know, he carries that a long way, you know, just to have it on his shoulder. So there's no denying that. So that's where I'm at. Dave, we saw it in theaters. What did you think?
I mean, it was silly. I was disappointed in it mostly because a lot of people are hyping it up, saying it's like the best DC movie since the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. And that's a very wrong statement. I mean, maybe it was for some people personally, but like when I heard that, I got really hyped for the movie. I had little to no expectations for the movie because I'd never followed Aquaman. I mean, I like Jason Momoa, or I call him Jason Momosa. I liked him a lot, and Justice League, and Justice League wasn't very good, but I liked his character a lot. I liked how dumb he played the character, mm-hmm. like the big dumb strong guy. I like that a lot, and he does that very well.
Yeah.
But just all that hype saying it's the best one, and like since Nolan, and I was like, oh, it'll be great, and then I went and saw it, and I'm like, this is like. It's not bad, but it's not great, and it really dragged in parts. I feel like the first 30 minutes were really important, and like the last 30 minutes were really important, and then like that hour and a half in the middle, like could have done without.
Well, they could have tightened it up for certain things for sure.
I mean, it was kind of slow in the middle, like really slow, but it was beautiful, like you said. It's one of the prettiest movies I've seen in a long time, although like the de-aging CGI, they don't have quite the thumb on it like Marvel does as far as for it like looking great. Mm-hmm. One thing I was a little bit disappointed with in the middle of the movie, and I guess it could have never happened, but when they're going to Africa to looking for that city, like I've been following this thing on YouTube where this guy thinks they found it, like that people have been looking for Atlantis in the wrong place, and that there's this place called the Eye of Africa, and it looks like an eyeball, like from like from shots from space, and like he measured it with Google Maps and like found Plato's writings on, you know, read and compared his writings of Atlantis to what this thing is, and a lot of the measurements, you know, work out well for, you know, the concentric rings and how wide it's supposed to be, where it falls. And like there being like a freshwater well in the center, and everything else around it being salt water. It was like, so many great things. I was like, oh look, they're gonna go to like the real life Atlantis. Like that would be cool. And it's just some random under sand buried city. I'm like, oh okay. I was a little bit sad. I mean, although this is a newer discovery, I think. So probably when they were making the movie, they didn't know. So I mean, I guess they couldn't have included that.
But I was sort of excited that maybe. I think you're putting too much brain power into this movie.
Yeah, probably. because the movie stands as Atlantis was above the sea and it fell under. But it was a neat thing. And so I was like, oh man, that'd be cool. Because they went to Africa. That's what made me think about that. Because I saw the YouTube video about how Atlantis might have actually been in Africa. Like, that's cool. But it wasn't. And, you know, like I said, there's a couple, like, really great shots in the film. But I don't understand the Black Manta thing because I don't know how strong Aquaman is in the comics and whatnot. But Aquaman, the movie's a beast. He shrugs off a grenade launcher grenade like it was nothing. And bullets don't bother him. He's basically indestructible unless it's Atlantean steel. So
not entirely, but it's basically the idea that he's so tough because he can withstand the depths of deep underwater. So he's sure. not, like a bullet probably is not going to pierce him or a knife. But certain things will definitely hurt him for sure.
Well, like in the movie, the only thing that hurts him is Atlantean steel and like their Atlantean weapons because Black Panther builds it into his googly eyes on his helmet.
Right.
Black Manta.
Black, whatever. he's black. He'll always be Black Panther to me. But
you'll always be Black Manta. You'll always be Black Panther to me.
You'll always be Black Panther to me. So, like, I don't understand him as a bad guy because what they do at the end of the movie is they totally set him up to be like maybe the major bad guy, because in this one he was like a sub bad guy.
Yeah.
And so I'm guessing he'll be like the major bad guy of the next one, but I just like don't understand how he'll be a threat because he was barely a threat in this movie. And right. And the only reason he was kind of a threat is because he had Atlantis backing him up. He had some of Orin's guards, his personal well-trained guards with him. And next movie, Aquaman's the king of Atlantis, so he's not going to have that. He's just going to have crazy conspiracy theory guy with him. And so I just can't see how this guy is going to be a threat to Aquaman at all. So I'm just kind of
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of bummed.
Yeah, Black Manta's sort of like the evil Batman kind of character. He's always like, you know, he's got like scenarios he builds to trap the hero in, and then they got to find their way to out of that trap kind of thing. So that's what he does. I mean, he's done that for years and years and years. So he can't technically beat Aquaman because he doesn't have the brute strength. He has technology and strategy to do things to get him into a bad place. So,
well, I mean that could be interesting then, but it just seems like that physically there's no. I mean, that's why I couldn't stand Luke Cage, because in Jessica Jones he was up against Purple Man who had like these crazy powers, and then in Luke Cage season one he's like up against a bunch of regular humans, and I'm like, wow, this is so boring. I couldn't even finish the season.
Right.
And I was just like, I don't like it when like a bad guy's like arch nemesis like can't even like hold up to him. Like, there's no drama in that, or there wasn't right. in drama. So I'm worried about Black Manta being a villain in the second one. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to buy it.
Right, right.
Personally, how about you, Ollie?
Well, I really liked the movie. There were a couple things you guys said that I wanted to comment on. What were those things? well, the relationship between Arthur and Mira. I kind of agree about the chemistry to an extent.
What did you like about the movie, Holly?
Well, you remember, I know I told you guys I didn't tell anybody else, obviously, because I'm not on another podcast. but... the gentleman in front of us at the theater looked like he went into a seizure right after the Ring of Fire.
That's awesome.
So Ring of Fire was so intense.
Well, I missed a gap. There was a gap where I was not paying attention, and all of a sudden they were in the desert, and it was like, okay. So the experience was broken for me, so I can't really comment on flow of the movie.
Because
even the rest of the movie, I was like, I wonder if he's coming back, and his family didn't go out with him. They just let him sit outside by himself for the next hour and a half. So it was like, I couldn't focus well, but, right. I don't know.
Well, I mean, to me, like I said before, I think it was a fun movie. I don't think it's a amazing movie. I think it's something that you could put on and just like have on the background while you're doing your things around the house and just enjoy the scenery of it. Mm. But it's not like you're not going to see the most amazing movie you ever saw in your whole entire life.
I would say it's probably my top five DC movies, though, with my favorite being The Dark Knight, the next favorite being Wonder Woman, and then Batman Begins, and then maybe this one.
Mm-hmm.
I would say maybe my fourth favorite fourth favorite recent DC movie of like from Nolan on. I'm not talking about anything before Nolan. Mm. I would say those are, so it's, I would say this one's in my top five for not being terrible, because I really didn't like Man of Steel. I did not like Batman vs Superman. I did not like Justice League, and I didn't like, I mean, I didn't hate those movies as much as like the critics did. I mean, because I was like, I don't know, they weren't awful, but they weren't great. They're kind of just okay movies. I mean, like they got shat on a lot more than I think maybe they deserve. I know Suicide Squad got shat on a lot. I've not seen that, so I can't throw that into my lineup at all. But it's definitely the top five of the modern DC movies for me. How about you guys? Yeah. How about you guys within the modern DC movies?
I still think Wonder Woman probably is top. Well, I don't know. Maybe Dark Knight, and then Wonder Woman.
Dark Knight is so good.
I Although I was talking to after we went out, I was talking about the second, the Batman Returns, the second one with the Penguin with Danny DeVito.
Yeah,
that if you revisit that, that's a much better movie than probably you remember it being.
I remember not liking it very much, but I saw it as a kid.
It's a dark movie, and it's but Danny DeVito's character as the Penguin is a really twisted but like sad character.
Yeah,
and I really enjoy it. I don't know where I put it, but I would put it in probably the top 5 or 6. This Aquaman movie, it is a beautiful movie. There's no getting around it,
and it's not terribly incompetent like Justice League or The Dark Knight or Batman vs Superman.
The story, I mean, there's gaps in the story, but I mean, it's not terrible. I mean, you can kind of like forgive it a little bit.
My biggest issue is like, where'd the suit come from?
The Aquaman
suit. Because I mean, the king wasn't wearing it. It wasn't sitting around next to him.
He was actually. You do see it all fall apart when his skeleton crumbles.
No, but the armor he was wearing was the same armor you saw in the hologram, and that wasn't the Aquaman armor. It was a different armor.
Yeah, well, but if you see him standing there, he's definitely wearing the orange scales and the green. Yeah, he is.
And so you did mention also like the whole molecular shift, so it could be part of his power.
Yeah, green scale or green pants.
I wish they would have like shown it be part of the power. Like if it is like the Iron Man suit or something like that, it just turns on when he can use his like a thing. That would have been kind of cool to see, but it just all of a sudden he shows up with the suit. I'm like, where'd the suit come from?
Yeah, no, that was from the king. I mean, it actually there you do see even fall to the ground.
Yeah, I saw something fall to the ground, but I thought it was the old king's armor. And it didn't look like the Aquaman armor to me. It looked more like plate mail instead of scale mail.
Yeah, it's a little bit of it's a weird. It looks weird because it doesn't even look like scale mail. So,
but I mean, like it's got all the little bumps in it, like it's scale mail. But the king looked like he was wearing like full plate. You know what I mean? It didn't seem bumpy.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait for the Blu-ray to come out.
I guess I'll have to rewatch it, but it didn't look like it to me.
I did appreciate how they were able to make them actually look like they were underwater. I was afraid of that. Looking really stupid.
Didn't they do amazing?
They did a really good job.
And the even the voicing, how they did the voices.
They distorted it just a little bit.
To make it sound like underwater. It was cool. It was definitely neat elements to it, for sure.
There was one thing I wanted to comment on when you were talking about Jason Momoa's direction. And the only time that I ever felt that the character slipped, aside from the whole jumping out of the water pose thing, was when they were in her ship after the Ring of Fire, when he was like, there's a bogey on our 6, and she was like, I don't know what that means, and he was like, bad guy behind us and he sounded really, really, really scared, like so high pitched, like it wasn't in character. It was funny, but it wasn't in character.
It seemed like an outtake they left in.
Kind of.
Oh, and speaking of that scene, those guns on top of the wall, they look just like the USS Vengeance's big gun that was about to shoot the Enterprise before they sabotaged the power.
Oh, and
Star Trek
Into Darkness?
Into Darkness, yeah. Oh. The guns looked just like it. I was like, oh, that looks like the Into Darkness.
The guns on top of the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, those big guns.
Those big, like, quad,
Before they fell into that lava and they escaped just before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't watching that part.
Oh, yeah. That'd probably be the part where you totally missed because of the guy with the seizure.
But you see the same guns on the way in. They show the guns when they're taking the when they're going into Atlantis the first time.
The quote-unquote bridge.
Yeah, the bridge. Yeah, when they're going past the bridge. You see them. Okay. I was like, huh, those look like the Star Trek guns. That's interesting.
One of the things I did enjoy in the movie was how Orm threw all the ships and the garbage back onto the ocean, onto the shores. Like, take your garbage back.
Take your garbage.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
I wonder how long that took to organize.
Yeah, I know. I just thought there was like, that was like, yeah, that was kind of like a that was it was a kind of a cool little scene. Like, yeah, stop polluting the oceans.
I'm actually surprised they didn't go to war sooner over that.
Yeah, no.
Like when Al Gore was president.
Was it Al Gore was president? So, but I mean, there was a, I mean, the one scene where Mira was like, you know, you guys just pollute and everything. He goes, there's other things in the world, you know, there's forests and ponds. They're like little oceans. The
tiny little oceans. Love you love them. Mm-hmm.
I love that. There were some great little scenes like that. I mean, there were some funny parts, and it's, the movie is, it's fun to watch. It's a popcorn movie, no doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no get around it. Like, no one's walking away from this movie. It's like, this is a masterpiece that will be, you know, in the shrines of movie magic forever, you know.
But I was hoping it would be for you, Aaron. I was sad it wasn't.
You know, I just enjoy that this is something in the world, you know. This is a thing, you know, that actually happened. And potentially there'll be another movie coming up. So that's another exciting thing. So, I mean,
it's making money, so probably.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the next movie won't make a great amount of money unless they do something really crazy with it. So I was actually
something like really close to the comics.
Yeah. I mean, that's a possibility too. One thing I was surprised is that there wasn't a, I was going to say that, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. The storyline for the comics follows like the 52, but they don't go really into anything else. So if you don't know, and I'm sure most people don't, Aquaman obviously has been around since the 1940s and has moved all the way from into, you know, today's day and age. Back in like the early, like mid 2000s, DC Comics totally rebooted everything. And they made it to the new 52. And that's kind of what you're seeing now. That's the story you're seeing now. So with the writer Jeff Johns from that time. So so you get sort of like a lot of the cool storylines that were there before kind of got like nixed and thrown away. So. Hmm. And they started all the comics back at number one moving forward from at that point. So. Hmm.
Interesting.
But it's good. Good stuff.
Yeah, I hope next one will be better. Maybe there'll be another villain to work with Black Panther to help take him down.
What am I doing here? Wakanda forever.
Wakanda in the water forever.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was a fun movie. And if you're looking for something just over the holidays to go see, you know, definitely worth seeing.
And yeah, it's good to see your families. Because, I mean, it's really nothing much objectionable in it.
No, not really.
I thought it was great.
But as I said after the movie, this is like sort of like the Flash Gordon of our day, of the 80s cheese movies. This is kind of what we're seeing right now.
I don't know. You thought it was cheesy?
There's some cheese moments to it for sure. It's a beautiful movie.
Yeah. I guess when you are the, you know, butt of a lot of people's jokes, you can't make it too serious. You got to leave a little cheese in there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's funny because I saw another article just today about the director, James Wan. He chose the Aquaman movie because he's like, everyone makes fun of him, so nobody will take him seriously, so I'll come out of nowhere and they'll be like blown away by him.
That's true.
And, but then because the Justice League and the Batman vs. Superman didn't do so well, they put a lot of pressure on him to make this a really great movie. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I just remembered another thing I was going to add earlier about his appearance and how it differs. You guys have been on the East Coast your whole lives, right?
Yeah, South. Pretty much. Well,
I was in the South everywhere. A bunch.
Well, I mean, out here on the West Coast, when you're out in the sun a lot, your hair does bleach out, and you know, he definitely had surfer hair, which was, you know, blonde at the tips and dark at the roots. And I don't know if they did it just because it was Jason Momoa's natural hair or if they left it for any other reason. But for me, it kind of made sense because it was like it bleached out from being on land, but you can see his roots are darker.
Yeah.
So, like, I guess I just rationalized him not being blonde by that, but to me it makes sense that that it's the wear from being on land with the land dwellers and not in Atlantis. So mm-hmm. I don't know. That was just my thought on the hair and on his appearance. But
I also think if he was Jason Momoa, was straight up blonde, I think he'd look pretty terrible. It would totally change his demeanor because I've never seen him in anything but brunette. And yeah. If he was totally blonde, I think it'd be really weird because he's got a darker complexion. It'd be kind of strange for him to have like just straight up blonde hair.
Well, I mean, I like that he looked more like Samoan, so
yeah,
was very, you know, I guess you expected him to live near water, you know, when you're an islander, you live near water, and so it was kind of similar. You know, his father looked like he was like from, you know, the Hawaiian Islands, and I thought it made sense. It looked good.
Yeah, the movie actually visually, I can't think of anything I could really fault the movie for visually. Yeah. Even like the Atlantis scenes were like things were so like whoever came up with these designs were like they're thinking not two dimensionally but, you know, three dimensionally, because if you live underwater, you're not, you know, just going, you know, back and forth, you're going up and down and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So that's really the beauty of it is like, you know,
Mira's dress during the Ring of Fire combat thing was odd to me. I couldn't tell if she was like that other race who could morph.
Mm.
And if she had like,
she has sort of like an Ursula thing.
Tentacle,
going on.
Yeah, like tentacle legs, like a.
She was wearing
like jellyfish legs. Yeah, it was weird.
There's jellyfish as like the cuff around the back of her neck. The legs are just dangling.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice.
I was waiting for her to start singing like Ariel after seeing the octopus with the drums. I was like, oh, we're doing Little Mermaid, huh?
So actually, two interesting things that you guys just point out. So actually, Mira is actually from another dimension in the comics, Zebel dimension, where she it's like an all water world, and she's like a princess in that world, and she comes to Earth and she falls in love with Aquaman and they get married. And also in the comics, Dave, in the early 60s comics. Aquaman has a pet octopus named Toppo, and he teaches Toppo how to play musical instruments in the comic books. So
that's funny.
That's cute.
Yeah. So it'd
be a one octopus happened. Band.
Yes, basically.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. So we wish everyone a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year if you're listening to this, like, and Christmas Absolutely. Eve if you're listening to this, like, you know, as it comes out. If not, we hope you enjoyed this Aquaman, this wet episode of Synthaholics.
Yes. Very much so.
I found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Nee.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Commodore Aaron O'Brien.
Decker.
O'Brien.
You've got a hyphenated last name.
Yeah. I got married. Me and Decker got married.
And then you had that... what's his son's name?
William Decker?
William Decker.
Yeah.
William T. Decker. That sounds a lot like another name we know.
I know. Yeah. Well, welcome to the Synthaholics, and we are talking about the original episode Doomsday, but we wanted just to touch on the new news.
Let's tell you who we are first, David.
I don't know. Who are we?
We are Synthaholics. You can find us at Synthaholics.com. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Synthaholic Duo. Me personally is David_J_Duncan.
I'm Blackbird2004 on Twitter.
And Guy is GS Davis Art. Yeah. And USS Tamerlan, and if you have iTunes and Stitcher and everything, subscribe.
We're available to all those. And also we're available for you to give us reviews and stars.
Stars. Because, I mean, you don't know how much this helps the show. I mean, like, the more people that leave us ratings and reviews, the more visible we will be seen in the charts. So please, please review us, and we'll read the 5-star reviews on the air as we get more of those. So, you know, you can hear the greatness from our voices, which you wrote in your voice.
Man, are you in luck today?
Yeah.
Yeah, so all that's cool, but also it's cooler is that we got a leading lady for Star Trek Discovery.
Yes.
Walking Dead actress Sonqua Martin Green, and she...
I have no idea who she is.
She is one of the main cast members for Walking Dead. She's been there, I don't know exactly what season she started in, but I think it was like fourth season.
I was talking to Robbie. He said she showed up in season 3, which is the season I quit on.
Okay.
But I think she was part of Jerome, what's his name? Tyrone, yeah. Yeah. She's part of Tyrone's crew.
That's right.
And Tyrone's crew was so small, such a small part in season 3. Like, I totally tuned out.
They end up at the very end, and then they meet up with the main group for Walking Dead. But she's been there for quite a while, and she's a magnificent actress. She emotes a lot. Now, unfortunately, all I usually see from her on acting skills is... reacting to the horror that she's usually faced, and then the shell shock that she has to get over the insane horror. So there's a little bit of joy, there's a little bit this in there, but she plays a very deep character in Walking Dead, and it's been great. It's great that she's got this casting, because I think she has a lot of depth to her. So I'm hoping we're going to see a lot.
I mean, everyone's been saying that she's a fantastic actress, which is great. I just haven't seen her in anything. I did watch season 3 of Walking Dead, but I was just fed up with it because it was so slow. I just didn't continue on.
I know. We disagree about Walking Dead.
Well, and her group's part in season 3 was... If I remember right, it was very small.
It was, but then they get kind of like integrated into the main.
So I have very little remembrance of how she was. Everyone said she's wonderful, so I'm glad
she's
that,
not.
That
she's yeah. If it was somebody, actress. If I felt that she wasn't a great actress, I would definitely say. But she definitely has a lot of. She got a good acting chops. She can show a lot of depth. It's a good thing.
And, you know, maybe we'll get to see her not sweaty and dirty and covered in zombie blood for once. So that'll be an interesting
or
change.
Maybe. We don't know. Hey, I just got
zombies
off the...
Zombies got off space!
I just got off the set of Walking Dead. No time for makeup!
Well, I mean, like, I guess she's not going to be that busy depending on the shooting schedule, because this is only going to be like a 13-episode arc. And if they keep it 13 episodes and she stays the main character, then...
Right. And then...
And they could always kill her in Walking Dead if she prefers doing Star Trek.
Well, and if they're filming now...
January is when they're supposed to start up in Toronto, I think.
Yeah. So if they're, you know, filming at this time, you know, they would definitely have enough time to get back to Georgia where they film Walking Dead, because I'm sure they don't want to do it in the middle of winter because they're mostly outside. So I don't know how their filming schedule is, but usually it's in the middle of summer.
They film in the middle of summer?
Well, around that time. Maybe not summer.
Miserable.
Oh, man. Have you seen them? They are literally sweating like crazy.
Yeah.
The only thing I always think about Walking Dead is, besides the zombies and everything and how they're going to get out of this situation or that situation, is like the BO has got to be awful.
I just can't imagine like shooting in summer in Atlanta. I live in Buffalo right now.
But, it's a sweat box.
But for you guys who don't know, I lived in the deep south most of my life. Never lived in Georgia, but I lived in Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Texas. I know. Like, on a Sunday, when it's the middle of summer, you open your car door and you sit in your car. The air is, like, edible. Like, it's like arid jello. Yeah. Like, it's just disgusting. And it's hot and it's miserable.
Mm-hmm. I don't know when they exactly filmed for Walking Dead, but I have seen them in the summertime.
I just thought they filmed like in the wintertime, so it's not as bad. And they
they might film in the winter, or maybe
spray on sweat.
Maybe late spring or autumn. I mean, I have seen different seasons now, thinking back. I've seen different seasons for.
But the thing is, deep south, I mean, it really doesn't matter. I mean, like, when I visit my family in Texarkana, Texas, like, I can wear shorts in December. Like,
sure.
It never
gets really.
No, I mean, like, you can wear. Sometimes you do have to bundle up. I mean, it does get cold. Mm-hmm. Like, it'll hit the 30s and stuff like that. But sometimes you can, you know, just walk around in shorts in December, and it's nice.
Well, now you're happy that you've downloaded this episode and we've got into the Georgia weather system. So.
The deep south weather system.
Well, so, anyways, it's good news. I'm happy to hear it. I'm happy to see that we've got a pretty decent acting, actress coming into this to take on this heavy role.
It was funny because this episode will be coming out around the 27th of December, but like we're recording it earlier. I recorded with Guy last week and I was like, there's got to be a whole bunch of new casting announcements soon because they're supposed to be, you know, filming in January. So, I mean, right. I mean, and like literally the day after I recorded with Guy, that news came out. So it's just how it happens.
I know. We're sorry. We can't bring these fast enough to you. Well,
hopefully there'll be more soon.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sure we're going to get a lot more very, very soon. We're going to get a whole much more information, too, because they'll start leaking stuff to us. This episode, we are talking about the original series, The Doomsday Machine. This first aired October 30th, 1967.
Wow, that's kind of like an interesting Halloween episode. And I mean, like, it's not scary, I guess, but it's like definitely the music's haunting.
Oh, it's great.
The music in this episode has stuck with me forever.
Yeah, like when he's going into the Doomsday Machine in the shuttlecraft.
Like that music, like I think that's my earliest memory of Star. I want to say that's probably my earliest memory of Star Trek.
Powerful,
because that music is so memorable. It's really basic, but it's just like it's the theme. It's just like
right.
You only need a strong couple notes for a strong theme, and it's there.
Well, yeah. So this is season 2, episode 6, and this is definitely one of my favorites of the original series. It's just so fun to watch.
It's right up there with Arena.
Yeah. But there's not enough. I don't know if it's Arena, but it's not. There's nothing that you really gotta like. There's not much to think about. It's just a great like adventure film. It's not that cerebral. It's just, you know, I mean, there's a little like, you know, Kirk wax poetic at the very end, but that's about it. You know,
it's just like, oh yeah, my good friend had died. It's fine. Like I just love how nonchalant they are about people dying.
This is life in space. Just gotta deal with it. So,
Or I guess you were just so miffed at him trying to take over a ship he didn't care that
I would be a little
died.
Pissed off, too.
He's like, I'm glad that sucker's dead.
I'd be like your friend taking your car and driving it into dumpsters and stuff like that. You know, like, what are you doing?
It's like your spare car.
No, that's my car. It's my Maserati. So the episode starts off, we get Lieutenant Palmer, who is communication.
Not played by Kat Roberts now.
But not
I mean, then.
We
she's
don't.
Put the camera with
but we don't get Uhura. She's missing in action. She must be on shore leave somewhere. Gone.
Riza.
Yeah.
She's got her Horgon out. She's getting some action.
So she gets a mass distress beacon, and it's from the constellation. And there's a lot of subspace interference, so they're going to check that out. When they get to the star system, they find that all 7 planets of the system have been destroyed and smashed to rubble. And they go to the next system, and they find that there once were healthy planets. They seem to be destroyed as well, except for the 2 inner planets. And that's where Enterprise finds her the other ship, the USS Constellation, that's being commanded by Commodore Matt Decker. It's just a lifeless hulk floating in space, and they go in to investigate.
I think this episode, I haven't watched all the original series on Netflix.
Shame
all
on
the
you.
Way through.
Shame on you.
I mean, I've seen all the episodes, but I mean, like, I got to imagine this is probably one of the ones that's heaviest on the new CG as far as for like the redoing the special. I mean, they redid all the special effects, but I mean, this episode is probably one of the more effects heavy episodes mm-hmm. of
It's wonderful, wonderfully done. I'm glad they redid it.
And seeing the constellation all broken up, its nacelle all messed up.
Oh, it's great. It's just great. Everything's about it's great. What was great even as a kid with the old effects was that it's suddenly you're like, oh, there are other ships just like the Enterprise, and there's other people in the fleet. I
also love how it's like 10-17, so it's still the same numbers as 1701.
Yeah.
So they just messed the numbers around a little bit.
I was like,
that's how they can.
I was just gaga about it. I was like, great. I mean, we do see other we do see other Constellation class starships during, was it Operation Annihilate?
Yeah, I think so.
The Ultimate Computer is where we get a whole bunch of other where they fight against the computer for Daystrom, who puts on the robot computer to control the Enterprise, mm-hmm. and they go against three other Constellation ships. But I mean, it still was cool, and its idea that that could happen to the Enterprise. You know, the vulnerability.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it just there's like all your mind just goes through all these like loops of like, oh, that's cool.
Enterprise is powerful. How did that happen?
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty cool. So we get that. That's where it starts off, and then they check out the Constellation. They have some reserve energy banks. There's some limited life support system. So they decide to go down and investigate. So McCoy, Scotty, and the damage control party, along with Kirk, goes on. And then Spock stays and takes command of the Enterprise. They go down and they obviously poke around the Constellation, where they come across Commodore Decker alone in the auxiliary control room.
And very catatonic.
Completely catatonic. And we find out that what the basis of this story is going to be is that they ran into a giant robot planet killer that's floating out in space and destroying planets. And when
bugles, lots of bugles,
when
it's the biggest bugle ever,
biggest bugle, it's the motherload of bugles inside. There's so many bugles. This is where they make bugles.
Yeah, it's.
But
they destroy planets and then they spit them and then they spit out bugles.
Bugles.
They poop out bugles.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What a wonderful world we live in. So we get the lowdown from Decker when he kind of comes to. He's obviously upset. He beamed his crew down, all 400 members, onto one of the planets below, trying to save them because the ship was finished and was pretty much figured that they're all going to die on the ship. Unfortunately, he beamed down the planet.
Did you not notice this thing destroys planets before you decided to beam them down?
Unfortunately, to Decker and his crew, that the planet eater went to that planet and chopped that planet up and apparently
the planet four. There is no planet four. Don't you think I know that?
Don't you think I know that? There was. But there's not anymore.
There's 400 of them.
It's.
They were crying to me. I couldn't do anything.
All I'm going to say is, if you have not seen this episode, you need to turn off this podcast and go and watch it. This episode is great.
Fantastic episode.
It's so great. It's one of the golden moments of the original series.
Yeah, very much.
It's great.
It's probably like top five TOS, mm-hmm. easy.
I love this episode so much. And so from there, they decide McCoy beams back with Decker, and Kirk and Scotty and the crew the landing party crew are going to try to get the ship somewhat working. The warp core is completely junked. The impulse engines, he has to cross circuit with the warp controls. He's messing all around this crossing circuits. Kirk is trying to get
vision. Scotty's wet dream.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this day, Captain.
He can't do it with the Enterprise. But
you're such a good captain, I never have to fix the engines too often.
Or cross-circuit things.
So Kirk is trying to get the ship's visual functions and communications. And during this whole time, there's like a big subspace jamming frequency that's being emitted by the Doomsday Machine. Now, they haven't seen the Doomsday Machine quite yet. So when McCoy and Decker beam aboard the Enterprise, all of a sudden they get on the Enterprise and hear red alert, and they run up to the bridge, and unfortunately the planet killer is right there bearing down on the Enterprise. And this is where they take some action against the planet killer, but it's ineffective, and Matt Decker decides he's going to have another go at it, trying to take the Planet Killer out.
I was wrong last time. I didn't go close enough to the thing that can destroy planets.
Right.
Because phasers somehow hurt worse if you're point blank. I'm pretty sure that's not how physics works.
And we have this great dynamic where basically Commodore Decker takes over the Enterprise using regulations, say, I'm the ranking flag officer. Yeah.
It's Spock and Decker shooting regulations back at each other.
Right. And McCoy, you know, is saying you can't let him do this. And he says, you could say that he can't do it if he's mentally incompetent, if you so deem so. And he says, I'll do that right here, right now.
And he's like, you'd also have to provide your medical records to support this. It's like, damn it.
He says, you know, I haven't had enough time to evaluate him yet, you know. And he's like, well, then it would be false. And, you know. So it's a great scene between all three of them, and Decker kicks off McCoy because McCoy's making too much of a problem on the bridge, and you can see, like Spock, you can see he doesn't like it, but he's sort of like shutting down to computer level, like he's just going to calculate everything in his head. He's not going to show any like emotion whatsoever, but you can see there's still an emotion there, like you.
I don't like you. You're just going to run us into the ground like your ship. I saw what you did to your ship.
Yeah.
No keys for you.
So meanwhile, meanwhile back on the Constellation, Kirk and Scott
is an engineer. Yeah, Kirk, I don't think Kirk ever does anything technical ever.
Well, we see him here and there. He gets under the council and does a little this and that. But
I see he's done it with Spock a couple times. Like, you need to fix that. But I don't think
Spock,
he's like,
just fix it. Jeez.
I don't think he's been like super hands on with it until this.
No,
episode.
Not too often. But you know, he's a captain, so he's got a lot of people to do that for him. But so he's down there. He's getting his hands dirty, and they get. They get the view screen working, and he sees that the Enterprise is engaging with the Doomsday Machine, and he's like, what is going on? Like, how is this happening?
Like, Enterprise, come in! Enterprise, come in now!
Unfortunately,
anybody!
Unfortunately, he can't get through.
Even Yeoman Rand, please, anybody answer me at this point.
Yeah. Please, Yeoman. But so he can't get through to him, and Scotty ends up getting the engines working eventually, and then he says, now if we can only have some phasers.
And the guy's like, oh yeah, I worked on those first, actually.
I've been recharging the phasers. And there's a great line. He goes, Scotty, you just earned your pay for the week. I used to love that as a kid when I heard him say that. It's like, I love when he says that stuff to him.
Starfleet signs my... I should have played Starfleet signs my check as the opener.
But they take a couple shots at the Doomsday Machine. The Doomsday Machine starts bearing down on the Constellation. He says, now that's great, Scotty. Now like, let's get us out of here, because they're basically... coming right after the Doomsday Machine is coming at the Constellation, and then the Enterprise comes back and starts firing at it. So
it weakens it enough to need to nom on some more planets. So yeah. Kirk is safe and Decker's,
and it veer
safe.
Off to another planet, and they discover that the trajectory of the Doomsday Machine is actually going into the heart of the most populated area of the Federation space. And
Ryza. Where Uhura is.
Whatever it takes. We have to save Ryza. But they realize they have to do something. Now, Spock's of the mind that we should get out of there, pick up the captain, Scotty, get out of there, and then...
regroup something.
Regroup, you know, tell the fleet.
Do something intelligent.
Yeah, tell the fleet what's going on. Of course, Decker, who's now taking command of the Enterprise, just says, we got to take more shots at this. We got to really take this thing out.
This hull is impenetrable. How would you not know? How do you not understand impenetrable?
He doesn't get it. You know, he thinks that if he has the Constellation...
I've never had a problem with women. I can penetrate anything.
Oh, jeez. Man, that guy's in trouble. So Decker basically does not want to hear anything that Spock has to say. At the same time, Kirk and crew, they're trying to get the ship... they got the ship basically running, but they want to get contact back to the Enterprise, and they want to get that kind of like what's going on. Because Decker keeps engaging with the planet.
And Kirk's like, don't mess up my ship.
Planet.
It's mine. I have to mess it up, not you.
Right. Well, so when they finally do get through, Kirk's like, so you're the jackass who's been attacking that thing. You know, it's like, what are you out of your mind? So, he tells Kirk blast regulations or blazes with regulations. You know, he says,
"I don't want you commanding my ship, Spock. I order you to take command.
Under my personal authority of the Enterprise, you are to take command of the from Commodore Decker." And so Decker,
you wouldn't dare.
Oh, it's a great scene where he kicks basically Decker out of the captain's seat. Spock takes over, veers off, and goes to pick up Kirk and Scotty and the crew on the Constellation, and he tells Decker that he's due for a medical exam with Dr. McCoy. Decker goes down and jumps one of his guards.
He jumps the red shirt. Man, he probably kills that guy, too.
He beat the crap out of that red shirt. And then he goes and jumps into the shuttle bay, steals a shuttlecraft, and is taking off to destroy the planet killer in the shuttlecraft because that's going to work.
Because, shuttlecraft are the most powerful weapons in the entire universe.
So, obviously, Sulu alerts Spock that this has been happening.
Why is there no security? Why are there no safeguards on shuttle bays? Like, this happens in original series. This happens all the time.
All the time. They're always stealing shuttlecrafts.
In Next Generation.
They beam down.
Like, a kid. Like, there's a couple times, like, I think when Wesley's going to the Starfleet Academy test or something, one of his friends, who's also a kid, steals a shuttlecraft. Yeah. Why is it so easy to take a shuttlecraft off? How do you have authority to open the doors?
I imagine they have some kind of hack, and when they find out. But it's like, you know, like, Sulu goes to Spock, goes, Mr. Spock, somebody's opening the shuttle bay and taking a shuttlecraft, and he goes, "Shut the shuttle bay doors, Mr. Sulu."
It's too late.
I'm like, dude, what?
Why? Like, shouldn't there be like codes or like, shouldn't there be like multiple passwords?
Shouldn't there be locks? Like, just padlocks.
Because, I mean, that's an extreme vulnerability.
Yeah.
Because the shuttle bay door on the Enterprise is huge.
It happens all the time.
It's huge.
And I'll only say that maybe Decker has like some like great
super
code that he can like just
sure. I mean, I guess it's a little bit more realistic that Decker could do it.
He is a Commodore. He outranks Captain Kirk.
Sure. I mean, I guess I can see how Commodore, but it keeps happening. Like, it seems like there should be like ship specific lockouts for.
There's a whole,
and only senior staff should know how to open the shuttle bay doors.
There's a whole Starfleet lobby trying to get more security for the shuttle bay doors on starships.
Because, like, you know, I mean, I'm surprised there hasn't been.
Has this happened to you? Has somebody got on your ship and stealing a shuttlecraft?
Stolen a shuttlecraft? Oh, I mean, they should. I mean, like, as easy it is to take a shuttlecraft and leave, I'm surprised there haven't been more Star Trek episodes about people like secretly landing on the shuttle bay to try to take over the Enterprise.
Yeah,
because I mean, if they can just have one guy on the inside who can just open up the doors, you could easily invade the Enterprise.
Seems like it happened all the time in Archer's Enterprise. Seems like people are always getting on the ship somehow. They're just like, "We're on the ship." Like, how did you get on the damn ship?
Well, I guess they just had a bunch of hatches that just said, you know, twist to open.
Yeah.
no computer console to lock the door. just twist to open.
Just like a submarine.
Exactly.
That's like a wheel.
Just a big wheel.
Pressurized door. So, anyways, Decker takes off with the shuttlecraft. Kirk and Spock are begging him to come back, but he says, "I'm going to fly the shuttlecraft right down
its throat."
Yeah, he's going to ram it right down its throat and kill himself and blow up the planet killer. Kirk pleads with him, "Don't do this." And there's a great sequence where Decker is flying into the mouth of the planet killer.
He is like the king of overacting.
He is very overacting. And
Like, I guess he's trying to sell it, and I guess it's a product of the 60s. But at the same time, he's definitely overacting. But it's also,
I love it.
It's also not bad.
It's not bad. It's doable because you're like
he's a pro at overacting. He's overacting, but he's doing it in such a way where it works.
Well, not only that, but so he's flying into this thing, and he's like got this like. I mean, you think about it. If you're going to fly into your death. Like, what kind of, like, balls of steel do you need?
I've got balls of steel.
I mean, really,
balls,
I mean,
balls.
I mean, you're flying into the your own death, into this big fiery mouth of this planet killer. And, you know, how do you keep yourself from not, like, I don't know. It's pretty crazy if you think about it. You know you're going to die.
He is not fit for duty.
You are not fit for duty.
But he is totally committed to taking that thing down.
Yeah, yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, he's not messing around.
Well, he goes in, and obviously the shuttlecraft is destroyed. But Sulu notes with Spock that, hey, it didn't seem to do any damage.
It flinched.
But it definitely saw power, some power shortage after that happened.
And Spock double-checks his work because Spock always has to double-check the work.
He, you know, did the math. Like, yep, you're right.
You're right. It's negligible, but it did hurt a little bit.
So, meanwhile, Enterprise is picking up Scotty and the landing party on the Constellation. Kirk asks Scotty to stay behind, and he gets inspired by Decker's last actions. And what he decides to do is he has the impulse engines wired to explode. Scotty says, I'm barely keeping these things from exploding.
It's like, you know, these things are made to explode.
Yeah, which I thought was hilarious. He's like, it won't take much. He's like, I can barely keep it together now. So he has this button set up that it gets a 30-second delay. He presses the button, and, of course, the ship will explode. So what Kirk plans to do is he's going to fly the Constellation into the mouth of the planet killer with a bigger destructive force than the small shuttlecraft. And Scotty does that. He beams aboard the Enterprise. Unfortunately, at the last minute, the transporter starts messing
up. I love how it shoots up plumes of smoke from each of the different transporter pads.
Just to let you know.
It's like, yes, this thing is not working. I almost kind of wish they did that in TNG. There's like giant plumes of smoke that come out.
Yeah, we don't see a lot of plumes of smoke in TNG, do we?
Well, not from the transporter pad anyway.
No, yeah, not there. Scotty's trying. He says, "I got to fix."
They saved it all for the weird blue aliens with that thing on their chest. They just breathe that smoke.
Oh yeah, I forgot about those guys.
I kind of wish there was only like two of them.
They never showed up again.
Maybe they'll be in Star Trek Discovery.
Maybe. So
maybe our lead will fall in love with one, a female one, and then it'll be weird.
Yeah. Who knows? So we got.
I can't kiss you. That thing on your chest is like. In the way.
Just awkward.
It's like in your face. Like, how do I engage with you? I'll take it off of you, baby.
I'm suffocating.
I'm dying.
So, getting back on topic, Dave's bizarre sexual fantasies. The Enterprise beams up Scotty. Obviously, Scotty's trying to fix the transporter pad that malfunctioned. And once he does, he says, I don't know how long it's going to hold, but let's get him over as fast as I can. So Kirk starts, Spock tells Kirk, hey, we only got a few minutes. You better get over here as fast as you can. So Kirk starts running towards the planet killer, waiting for the last couple seconds to hit that button so I'll self-destruct.
Because it's only a 30-second fuse.
30 seconds. You could have done a minute.
Come on. You should have done a little bit longer than 30 seconds, Kirk.
So he's flying into it, and once finally he's close enough, he's like, 500 miles away or less.
Yeah.
He hits the button. It's flying right into the mouth of the planet killer. And he's like, okay, beam me up. And then, again, the transporter room starts
exploding. Scotty's got to go to the Jeffries tube and start. He's like, I got to rig it up. And then it's still exploding.
And he gets up there and he's doing it. And I love Spock. It's sort of like, Mr. Scott. Mr. Scott.
It's like, Mr. Scott, try this. He's offering him engineering advice.
He's like, it's just hilarious that he's hounding him. And
he's like, I can't concentrate.
But fortunately, Scotty does get the transporter room working for that second. They beam up Kirk.
At the very last second.
Very last second. The Constellation flies into the Doomsday Machine and blows up, and the destructive force of the Constellation blowing up within the Doomsday Machine renders the Doomsday Machine basically inert. Mm-hmm. It doesn't destroy. It just kind of floats off into space and is a dead. And, you know, Kirk basically, like I said at the very end, wax poetic about the hydrogen bombs.
Hydrogen, yeah.
Which is always like kind of dated now because hydrogen bombs are, of course, extremely destructive, but not as destructive as our megaton destructive forces of nuclear missiles.
You've got Russia with the Tsar Bomba, where Where that's not even the most powerful one. They've got the Tsar Bomba 2, basically. But the Tsar Bomba 1, when they drop that bomb on that big island that Russia has above it that, that no one lives on,
yeah,
like, they almost destroyed the plane they were in.
Wow.
And the shockwave was felt as far away as, like, Finland and Norway and stuff like that.
Right.
And the shockwave technically orbited the Earth, like, three times before it dissipated. But it was, like, it broke windows as far away as...
How
like,
many megatons was that? Do you know?
I don't remember. But it was... like, the Tsar Bomba is disgusting. And the Tsar Bomba 2 is even more disgusting because it, not only is it more powerful than the first Tsar Bomba, uh-huh, it's also... a stealth bomb. So, like, we couldn't, like, we probably won't be able to track it, mm-hmm, if they decided to use Tsar Bomba on us. And, like, say, we live in Buffalo. We're like, 7 hours driving from New York City. If they dropped this bomb on New York City, we would be screwed. Like it, the shockwave may not, like, may not kill us, but, like, it will screw up our city.
Well, it's funny that you say that because we are in Buffalo at a time, back in the 50s and 60s, it was definitely noted that through intelligence that the Russia was definitely going to drop a bomb in Buffalo. And I guess the it was the location of the bomb was supposedly, this is what I've heard, I've never confirmed this, was Sheridan and Niagara Falls Boulevard.
Why Buffalo?
Buffalo at the time was pretty populated, and there was a lot of steel production at the time. Here, you know, we had Bethlehem Steel, we had the power plants.
I guess we're not a big target anymore. But New York City would probably be.
Oh, New York City is going. Yeah, it's going to be gone.
A target.
And, oh yeah.
But if they use a Tsar Bomba on it, we will be, if not dead, we will be really messed up.
See, my only thing is, if I was going to be in a nuclear destructive thing, I want to be at Ground Zero. I don't want to go through the. I don't want to go through the fallout.
You don't want to. You don't want to be where the aftershock hits you.
I just want to be vaporized in like a second, like just like a split second, just gone. You know, I know it'll suck for that second, but I don't have to live with the aftermath and nuclear fallout, nuclear winter, you know, the roving bands of cannibals and all everything else that's going to happen.
All the Mad Max people.
Yeah, I don't have it in me, you know? I just camp out. If I knew where it was, it's like, oh, nuclear destruction? Let's camp out right here.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, but like, yeah, like if they, I mean, and Finland, and that's way, way, way further away from this island than we are to New York City. I mean, we would be in serious trouble if Tsar Bomba hit anywhere, you know, in any state adjacent to us.
Well, not just that, but, you know, what would, even if you weren't...
Even if it landed in D.C., like, we would still feel the effects of a Tsar Bomba in Buffalo. It is insane how insanely powerful these weapons are.
Oh, and you know that United States has crazy weapons like that sitting.
Yeah. I don't know if we've got as big as megatons, but we've got enough of them. I mean, between both of us, we can nuke the world dead, like, you know, six times over.
Right.
But
right.
It's just Russia can use less bombs doing it.
Right, right. No, for sure. But, so anyways, that's...
That's our dark, bleak New Year's, you know.
Well, I just wanted to bring up
thoughts
that, you know,
for you guys.
We're you know, by the time you get this, we're like probably a couple days away from Trump becoming inaugurated as president. You know, anything can happen. Just be ready. He might build the Planet Eater.
The Planet Killer. Oh, the giant Pringle.
So,
I mean, not Pringle, the Bugle. Sorry.
Before we get even darker.
Oh, we're going to go darker?
Oh, yeah. We're gonna go nice and dark here. So, what are we? What's your thoughts about this episode? Now that we've kind of recapped the whole thing,
it's just such a classic.
Could be a movie. Like,
it really could be a movie. Like I almost kind of hope Star Trek IV is kind of about the Planet Killer because it really could be a movie. I'd love to see maybe more than
that.
Just
would be
one
sweet.
Ship.
That would be sweet.
It's just.
I'm going to tweet Simon Pegg.
Yes.
I am.
Planet Killer. Well, the thing is, like, I've only read a couple Star Trek novels, but there's a novel called Before Dishonor. It involves Spock, Seven of Nine, and the Planet Killer, mm-hmm. and the Borg. And this book is fantastic because the Borg come to invade, and they think the Planet Killer can, like, you know, be a good weapon against the Borg. So Seven of Nine and Spock try to go reactivate the Planet Killer because I think they towed it into Federation space. It's like in a It's like in a museum, like next to the original Enterprise, I think. Wow. Like, wow. Space museum. Like, it's insane. It's pretty funny that they just like, you know, saved it. And the book to me was really funny because at one point that the Borg come through and they destroy Pluto. And then someone says, "Oh, that's not a planet anymore." Oh yeah, we reinstituted it as a planet later, because the thing is, we've deemed Pluto not a planet.
Yeah, it's a dwarf planet now.
Yeah, it's not a real planet. So like, I think it's funny that like even Star Trek they're kind of referencing. Oh yeah, we redeemed it a planet later on.
Right.
Like as a joke, I'm like, really? Like it just
they threw that in there.
I just thought that was funny to have in a book where they're like, oh yeah, Pluto's a planet again, and then the Borg destroy it. So oh well, goodbye Pluto.
Well. And then what happens when the Borg assimilates the planet killer? So
I think I can't remember exactly. Like for some reason, the Pluto part sticks out to me more than what they did with the Borg. I think they stopped the Borg with a planet killer. But then the books, there's three books that come directly after it, the Destiny trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
In the Destiny trilogy, those three books deal about the origin of the Borg and the end of the Borg. And it's got Ezri Dax in it. It's got Riker on his ship. It's got Picard on his ship. And it's got Erica Hernandez, the in XO2 captain, the Enterprise. I mean, not the Enterprise, but the Columbia.
Oh.
From Enterprise. You see her in a couple episodes. She's also in it.
Hmm.
So, like, it involves so much Star Trek, and it's a trilogy. It's a Destiny trilogy. It's really, really good. It deals with the origins and the demise of the Borg. And I know technically the books aren't canon. They're, like, memory beta material.
Right.
Not memory alpha, but they're really good. Like, those four books, because they pretty much run in a sequence, Before Dishonor and the Destiny trilogy.
That never bothers me so much.
I highly recommend those. They're a lot of fun.
As long as it's... you know, engages you, spurs your imagination, makes you like, you know, some sort of enjoyment. I mean, I don't really care if it's canon or not. You know, I just enjoy a good story.
Yeah.
I enjoy a good yarn.
Yeah. Yeah, but those are the only four Star Trek books I've read, but I definitely recommend them to anybody who's interested in reading Star Trek. And, you know, in this one, you know, Before Dishonored deals with the Planet Killer. It is really cool because you've got Spock and Seven of Nine and the Planet Killer and the Borg.
Right.
And then you've got the trilogy that follows it where, like, it's got almost everybody from Star Trek.
It's awesome.
Because it spans the origin of the Borg to the demise of the Borg.
Right.
It's fantastic.
Well, I love this episode so damn much. There's nothing about this episode I hate. There's literally nothing I hate. This is just one of those episodes. I'm a huge original series fan.
It is like a perfect episode.
It's everything you want for a sci-fi, for Star Trek, and you know, Kirk's at his best. Spock is at his best. I mean, even Scotty's great. I mean, everybody's there. The only person who's not there, unfortunately, is Uhura, and we don't have Chekhov. There's two people missing.
Is this season two?
Season two. But
okay, yeah, so Chekhov.
For some reason, they just didn't show up on this episode. I don't know if they were on vacation.
Well, I think it's cool to have, you know, Lieutenant Palmer's. You know, I mean, to have a B crew.
Maybe she shows up in a couple of. This Way to Eden is that way. She's in that episode, and she also does the voice of the companion during Metamorphosis.
Gotcha.
So she's that voice. So okay. she has a little Trek, you know.
Sure.
Creds.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to call it.
but yeah, I mean, yeah, this episode's fantastic. It's cool to see a B crew every now and then.
I love it. Yeah, I love to see different.
It makes it feel like it's more like a real ship, because TNG didn't feel as real because you just had like the main people all the time.
There's two things, obviously. What is it? Lower Decks was the one.
Where it was like season six.
Yeah, you saw like all the ensigns, and they don't know what the hell's going on, which is a great idea. And then the other one was, I forgot what season it was, but Data taking like the third shift of command.
Oh, yeah.
Where
he
basically, when everyone's asleep, he just runs the bridge and he has like the third shift, everyone's, you know, whoever's filling in.
Until he decides that dreaming is a good thing he should do, and he quits the third shift so he can just waste time dreaming as a robot. Does Data dream of electric sheep?
Could be. I bet he's programmed for that.
That'd be funny if that's what he dreamed about. The guy knew the saying, "Do robots dream of electric sheep?"
And that's all he dreams about.
Yeah, he programmed that into him.
I want to dream about something else. I want a cake, a peptide cake.
Cellular peptide cake.
That
looks like Deanna Troi, but flat-chested, which is really weird. I love I think that cake should have definitely.
That's a great episode too.
Not been as flat.
Well, yeah. So, Doomsday Machine. If you haven't seen it, definitely watch it. If you are, you know, if you have seen it, watch it again because it is just a golden episode. I can't think of a better. I mean, there's a couple, obviously, original series, but original series you vacillate
know,
from
you know Space Seed, Arena,
City on the Edge Forever.
Like, I mean, there's like a handful of ones that are just
there's about five or six amazing episodes that
this is one of
they're
them.
Almost flawless. This is a flawless episode, and you get the full dynamic of the crew. You get the full dynamic of what Star Trek is about, and it's great. It's just I can't say enough good things about this episode. It's just fun to watch. There's nothing to really make fun of. You know, like Galloway 7, we make fun of the commissioner's cape, okay, you know, yeah. But I mean, it's like, there's stuff like that, but there's really not much.
And, Decker overacts, but he overacts to the point where it's still kind of good.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird. It's really, really weird how he overacts.
He does overact a lot. And I read that he was not aware of the parallels of Moby Dick and that he was technically Captain Mayhem. So when acting this, he didn't have that in mind. So that's interesting that this still plays out the Captain Ahab story, and he didn't even have this in mind. So
that's really funny. I didn't think about that.
He says I didn't think about it until like I read an article like years later about the episode, and I was like, oh, I was technically Ahab.
Yeah,
I didn't get that, you know. So
his white bugle.
That's my white bugle. I've been chasing it for years. So yeah, great episode. I love. The idea that like an ultimate doomsday destructive machine that's kind of like outlived its civilization is out there just destroying the universe slowly, gnawing away at it, you know, in the depths of space. It's a great idea, isn't it? Just that there's just this machine that's destroying.
That's like almost unstoppable.
Like Galactus type.
Yeah. Thing,
you know, just eating planets. You know, like what's worse? I mean, it's like the Death Star.
At least with Galactus, you could like talk to it. Like, yeah. With the Planet Killer, there's
nothing. It's a mindless, drone that's just going out there.
Eats planets, kills.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I feel like, you know, this is like the progenitor to the crystalline entity.
Exactly.
Where the crystalline entity doesn't chop the planet up.
Yeah.
It just takes all life off the planet, which is almost as bad, if not worse, because it's leaving like the Rock Hulk, but it's just eating everything alive.
Yeah, or the Borg, how they just strip out planets when they want to. Great idea, man. It just fires your imagination about like Spock says. I hope there's not more of those out there. He goes,
that would be cool. I'd love to see them.
Kirk goes, I found one quite sufficient.
Yeah. And that's when he starts waxing.
I love Kirk wax. Always has like this little like, you know, devil may care smirk at the end of everything. He's like, you know, I found white one quite sufficient.
Yeah. It is. That's the point where I'm like, he just like, wow, you just really don't care that your friend died.
And that you almost did not beam up from the constellation. Like, literally, like
you are not scarred by that in the
least. 5 minutes ago. That's what's great about Kirk, is that that would happen. And he's like, yeah, I made it. So, great. Oh, man, great episode. And, I can't imagine anybody seeing this episode and not just being, like, in love with Star Trek or having some kind of fascination with it. It's one of those episodes I definitely want people to see if they're going to see the original series.
Sure, yeah. It's for sure one of the ones. You don't tell people to watch the original series and say, hey, watch The Impasse.
No. Don't watch Impasse. Strike that from your memory. Don't ever watch The Impasse.
The Impasse.
There's so many... sketchy or goofy original series that are out there.
Wolf of the Fold's
a hard one. Yeah.
It had some parts that
could have been good, but it just kind of
gets
bogged down. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of them, you know, they're all like that. But I this episode is not one of them.
Oh, this is as perfect as like a 1967 episode of television there possibly could be.
So when everyone hears this, we are on the cusp of 2017, or if not, you're already 2017 when you're hearing this. Dave, do you feel a doomsday for our upcoming 2017, or do you think we're going to be okay?
You see, there's this thing called Murphy's Law.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm well familiar with Mr. Murphy.
I don't like Mr. Murphy has kicked both our ass all year long.
This has been a rough year,
2016. But the thing is, like, I don't want to tempt Murphy by saying it can't get any worse. Please, nobody out there say it can't get worse, because Murphy will be like, "Hold my beer," and he'll wreck 2017 worse than he wrecked 2016. Yeah. Like, 2016 is a terrible year. I'm reluctant. Like I said, I don't want to say it can't get any worse, because if you say that, it will get worse. So I will tentatively hope that 2017 is a better year, but I will be skeptical.
With that said, I do. I'm always optimistic. I try to stay optimistic no matter what. I'm hoping with the new news of Discovery with Martin Green as the leader of the cast, I hope that this is going to be awesome, because she is great. I am scared of our political climate, but I'm not going to get into that, so I'm scared of that. But I can't imagine there'd be any more deaths. I mean, as long as Shatner doesn't die in 2017.
And he's coming to Nickel City Con in Buffalo.
I know. In May.
In May. So we're so excited to be in the same room with him, maybe. Come May.
Who knows? Well, that's all it comes down to, is that I'm hoping that 2017 won't suck, but 2016 was not easy.
No,
for anybody.
It was not. I mean, so many great actors died this year, musicians. Like, it's just. I mean, the one good death was Fidel Castro. I mean,
we lost that monster.
We lost that monster, but he died the same day as Ron Glass. So,
you know, it's weird because, like, I was reading that the Cuba, they found like a possible vaccine for cancer. And I always felt like that, like, is this like civilization? Like, they unlock some kind of, like, you know, like...
A great leader has died. We've unlocked an amazing potential.
Yeah. Potential. And then we found out about that, you know, that they unlocked that potential, you know? So it's like, that's the only thing I could think about when I read that article, is like, they possibly might have a vaccine for cancer. If that's even close to true...
It's probably tobacco. That would be amazing. That Cuban cigar tobacco is like the
tobacco.
Is the cure for cancer.
Tobacco cures cancer.
Yes, yes. It would be amazing.
No, but
because I mean, you know, they make it with snakes. I mean, they make anti venom from the venom.
No,
right?
That's true.
So,
but
I mean, I think they'll be amazing.
People get breast cancer. People get skin cancer.
But it would still be amazing
it would be interesting if there was
somehow Cuban tobacco was like the key to
some tie into that. Yeah. But yeah, no, it's just, so that's a promising lead in 2017. And we also, like I said, we've got the Star Trek Discovery, which I'm excited about. And I think there's a lot of good things on the horizon. I'm still dubious, because 2016 has kicked my ass thoroughly, and I'm trying to do the best I can to be like, yeah, it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay. We'll survive.
We're going to be okay, guys.
I will survive.
So, yeah. So we are wishing everyone a happy new year.
A happy new year, a merry Christmas, a happy holidays if you don't celebrate Christmas, a happy...
Crazy Kwanzaa.
Yeah, Crazy Kwanzaa, you know, Hanukkah, you know, whatever it is you celebrate, if you go to a Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day, that's awesome. eat those cats.
A Festivus for the rest of us.
if you like watching The Christmas Story, you know, all day long on Christmas, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously Christmas, while you're getting this, it probably just passed over the weekend. We hope you survived your family and...
Hope you watch Star Trek Generations so you can see Picard with his Tiny Tim son next to the Christmas tree.
Yeah, I love you, Papa.
Oh, man. I love you too, Tiny Tim.
Could they get any cuter of a little kid? Like, so Tiny Tim.
Never get older, Tiny Tim.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Nexus, he would never grow up.
Yeah, stay that age forever in the Nexus. Yeah, great. We hope you had a great time with that. We enjoy having this time that we could get together with you and, you know, share Star Trek.
Share Star Trek, share with your friends,
Star
and your
Wars.
Family and everything. And yeah, Star Wars Rogue One just came out. We actually recorded with the Nerdy Nomicon, which
check that out.
It'll probably be out by the time you hear this. So yeah, check out the Nerdy Nomicon. Our friends Robbie Palmer from Artful Gremlins. That's their show, and you'll be able to hear our take on that. And later. Later, we will be doing our own take on Synthaholics of Rogue One in January with Guy Davis and Troy from they do a podcast together called Rocky Mountain Geek Tank. Mm-hmm. So we will be
teaming up.
We'll be teaming up. We'll do another cross podcast thing for our non Trek episode of the month.
It's going to be great. We had a fun time with them. I enjoyed Rogue One. I hope everyone else gets a chance. And by the time you hear Rogue One. Commentary and thoughts that you have seen it and you can, you know, tune in without spoilers.
Sure. But, you know, spoilers anyway, because we will not hold back.
No. I won't say anything now. Just I'll give people a little bit of time.
Sure. Yeah. Got a couple weeks.
This is your warning.
Rogue One is coming.
Yeah.
It's like the Planet Killer. You can't stop it.
Anyways. Anything else we want to add about Doomsday 2017 and anything else?
Doomsday. You know, 2016 was the doomsday machine for us, so hopefully 2017 will not be.
Be the flower.
Hopefully it'll be the Genesis for us.
Yes. Genesis!
Genesis!
Genesis Planet Forbidden is not!
I love that guy. They need to do, like, you know, they did the Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Please.
They need to do, like, a Star Trek story and have a movie about
him. I'll shoot myself in the head. I hate that guy.
He's like the Star Trek Yoda.
He's memorable.
But with really bushy eyebrows. And like, yeah. He's the Star Trek Yoda. Nah. I think they should make a movie about him.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be funny.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, where's our music provided by?
Our music is provided by Warp 11. Warp 11 actually was just at the Star Trek 50th anniversary convention, and I think in San Francisco? I think I'm bad with cities in California, but I want to say it was San Francisco.
Well, they're from Sacramento, so they're right around. I mean, Sacramento, so they're right around the corner from that.
Right around the corner. So, you know, Warp 11, they are amazing. They let us use their music for our show. Please go support them, buy their latest album, Rock Out with Your Smock Out. Go follow them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. They're at Warp 11 on Facebook. I mean, on Twitter, and, you know, just type in Warp 11, they'll come up and you can see all the photos. They actually have to share the stage with William Shatner.
That's awesome.
At the con. So I don't know if they sang Jerk My Kirk for him, just to, you know, and it's really funny.
Sounds like something Shatner would get into. Yeah, do that.
It's like, yeah, that's awesome. No, but it's just they have some great pictures of them meeting some of the cast members that they've been sharing on their Warp 11 Facebook page. So go go check them out. Go like them. Go check out their pictures of them seeing the Star Trek cast. Support them. Buy their albums. They do great work. They're hilarious. They're funny.
They're funny.
And
off the wall.
Yeah, and I definitely want to have them back on to talk so they can tell us about that convention and what happened with Shatner and everything. I think that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll be a preview of what's to come in 2017. But yeah, follow them online. If you think we're worth a dollar, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/synthaholics.
What's a buck? A buck a month.
Yeah.
A buck a month. If you think this show's fun to listen to, if we entertain you slightly on your commute to work, on your daily grind of while you're typing some stupid report for your stupid boss that you freaking hate.
Those damn TPS reports.
If you hate them and we lighten your day just slightly, you know, throw us a buck. Or, hey, even better, tell a friend.
Tell a friend. And or review us on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, anything that we are on. Google Play Music. We are everywhere where you can find your podcasts.
We're everywhere. We're right outside your window. Don't look. We're there.
You might say we're peeping Synthaholics, but, you know, we're just there for you. We're there to egg you on and support you.
Like, yeah, jerk your Kirk.
Jerk it hard.
You heard it here first, your card.
Yeah. But, you know, also, Guy, you can support him at patreon.com/CSDavisArt.
Tamberlin's awesome. Witches of Flame is
amazing.
He's just really getting started with that, so we're getting the whole narrative of like where his characters are coming from.
Oh, so yeah. So, I mean, it's easy. I mean, Witches of Flame is brand new, so it's really easy to jump into because he releases basically a panel a week.
Yeah, and we're basically 7 pages in, so it's not like you're going to be like have a lot to read. So if you want to pick that up and start reading that, great. Also, he's doing his USS Tamberlin story,
which he's been doing for years. So it's amazing ongoing comic featuring a Saladin class
destroyer. Yes,
that's amazing. Yeah.
Awesome, the USS Tamberlin. So worth checking out. And, you know, if you have some money to throw his way, he is an artist. He can use any kind of funds and support.
And he is not just an artist for that. He is an artist for a living. That is his, you know, livelihood.
Yeah.
And he is also a podcaster with his own podcast. And he joins us many a times on the Hall.
So check those out as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We hope you have a great 2017.
We hope your 2016 was better than ours. But we were here for you the whole year.
You don't know the pain we've been through, but...
Butt surgery and all that stuff.
Surgery, loss of incomes.
Employment. We were both like, go from a job the same day. We'll be having Pete Herr on in February to commemorate that with Year of Hell, Part 1 and 2.
Year of Hell.
To commemorate our...
We definitely got to talk about Year of Hell, because we had 2016 was our Year of Hell.
Yeah, so I mean, but it started in February, so I mean, we're going to do a Year of Hell for our Year of Hell.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. That's when it really started, the shit, it really shit the bed for us, you know. Yeah. It was getting there, and then it got worse, so...
Yeah, it's just when the ball started rolling.
It's when the pain really started rolling out on us.
The pain! Pain! Wait, this isn't that episode.
No, not that episode.
That episode's also amazing, Devil in the Dark.
We talked
about that, you know, weeks and weeks ago with Tricorder Transmissions.
Yes.
So check that. Go back and check that episode out, because that was another fantastic time that we got to talk with them.
It's another great
another podcast.
Original series. You need to see that.
Yeah.
Well, hey. 2017. Here's for hoping.
Here's for hoping. Got our whiskey. We're hold on and drink.
Hold on tight.
Oh, well. Thank you all so much for listening. We again hope your holidays were amazing. Mm-hmm. Live long and prosper, my friends.
Please do. I have not seen anything that he's done that, you know, his hands are, that his characters aren't phenomenal. It's just he doesn't know how to end a fucking story. That's all it comes down to. Every time.
I completely agree with you about
that. Yeah, he could just plot out the whole story, figure out how the story's going to end before he gets there, and then he's done it over and over again.
He really has.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost feels like R.L. Stein. What, from Goosebumps way back in the day in that respect?
Yeah.
You know, everything is left open for that continuation.
We got
You never kill him, Slappy. Slappy's always around for Night of the Living Dead.
I can
14.
Hear me now.
You know?
The rain is gone.
Your mic's really, really hot.
How hot is it?
It's turning me on.
Hmm.
Soundboard says 69. Weird.
I'm so glad I'm recording right now.
God damn it.
Marvelous. Man, that's great.
Oh. Lately, I haven't been on the ball with getting recording classic things like that before a show, but...
How are we doing this? Is this
this is for Robbie's... This is
Robbie's... Nerdonomicon?
That was what I was going to ask
Robbie's
stream
game.
This was going to be on.
This is yours.
Okay.
Booyah. My equipment, your stream. I'll send you the file tomorrow or something.
Beautiful. I'll shoot for a Wednesday release date next week, then.
Care.
So, is he doing the intros?
Yes, he would be doing the intros.
Okay. You know how I always do that today on our show thing right before? So, I'll start out with that, I'll do a quick cut, and then we'll do the sign-ins. And just for the record, how would you guys feel about doing something similar to this, like, once a month? Like, we see a movie, like, because there's a lot of fucking awesome-looking shit coming out. You know, we've got Guardians Volume 2, we've got...
Cool.
You know,
I legitimately thought about that today. Like, no joke. Probably before just I got to the
Gals
theater. I was like,
Michelle.
We need to figure out some sort of monthly thing.
Yeah.
To either appear on another show.
Really, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. We need
monthly
crossovers are great. So let's.
I mean, I've got the rest of my team with Holly, Brooke, Hobart, and Nikki from CBM. You've got your team and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this would be a lot of fun.
I think so, too.
If, absolutely.
You know, one or two of us can't.
We haven't even done anything yet. How are you going to say if it's fun or not?
This might suck.
Quit counting your chickens before they hatch.
You've been on mine. Yeah, we've never all been together, but
it could just be a disaster.
Stop it.
We all start punching each other.
The beer went.
I'm. You know, I was giving you guys both pessimism before, and that's not going away.
All right.